Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior programs are also available there under Public Affairs. Today is May 5th. 2020. We are continuing to record these segments. If you have questions, you are welcome to send them via email to yourfinancialchoices.com. The questions can be submitted through that website. Again, yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, we are talking about cash flow decisions that would impact you, especially during this time where we are socially distancing. Some of us may not be working our regular jobs. Some people have had to cut down to part-time. Some of us are continuing to work and maybe are retired and have very different cash flow decisions. So I thought we would cover some of that this evening. I do want to start with a question, though, that came in from the website. Again, that is yourfinancialchoices.com. You could submit questions through there. And that is regarding a K-1, questions around K-1. So I will start with that, and then we'll continue our topic with the cash flow decisions. Again, as we've been doing the last couple of weeks, we do want to, of course, thank all of the people out there whose jobs are helping our communities with food distribution, health care, financial support, human services, home maintenance, government action, and all those businesses who continue to support their employees with working from home. So thank you for your efforts in all of that. So our question that came through the website was, can you spend some time talking about Schedule K-1s, specifically for individuals such as myself who own stock in a company that mails this tax document to partners? It's a little confusing as to what you report to the IRS and when you do report it. So in answer to this question, I wanted to clarify a couple things. So clarifying the words from the question. So if the tax document is mailed to partners, the ownership is not stock. It's a partnership interest. So the question could be confused a little bit. So I just wanted to clarify that. In recent years, many investments that have been made by investors include limited partnerships or master limited partnerships, especially in energy. So the partnership files a Form 1065 and reports the partner shares on a 1065 Schedule K-1. So this is the K-1 form that our listener was asking about. More recently, many of these partnerships are switching to corporations, which will then convert to stock rather than partnership interest or units. Okay, so our listener had thought she owned stock. She actually owns partnership interest. But it can seem confusing when possibly your financial advisor is investing for you and they buy these interests. And you might think it's stock, but it really could be a partnership interest. And what you want to do or to know the difference is if you have your brokerage statement or your tax document, at the end of the tax document, usually there's like some supplemental information and it will list the partnership interest that may have been reported on your 1099. So sometimes those partnership interests you own actually are bought through a broker. So I wanted to mention that. So when some of these partnerships switch to corporation, then the reporting to you is going to switch. The dividends get paid on stock through a 1099 DIV, so DIV for dividend. So people who invest in some of these publicly traded partnerships, they think they're getting dividends, and it's really a partnership distribution, which could represent income from the partnership, or it just might be a return of your original investment. So the K-1s that are issued will have a lot of important information on them, which you're going to have to make sure that if you're preparing your own tax return, you retain all that information, or if you're having someone prepare the tax return for you, that you provide that preparer not just the page one of the K-1, but all the supplemental information as well. It's very important. So before I talk about some of the complications of the reporting from a K-1, I just want to mention that there could be more than one kind of K-1. So someone who's a partner and owns a partnership interest in some investment, it's a 1065 Schedule K-1 because partnerships file a Form 1065. But you might also be a shareholder in an S corporation, and S corporations file a Form 1120S, and their K-1 up in the top corner will say 1120S K-1. And we also see K-1s for beneficiaries of estates or trusts. So if you're a beneficiary of an estate or trust, you may be getting a Schedule K-1, and that is designated by the 1041 K-1 note up in the upper left-hand corner of a K-1. So K-1s could be for partnerships, S-corporations, estates, and trust. They're all a little bit different. And if you're doing your own tax preparation and you're using software, you really want to make sure that you're putting it in the right K-1 input screen. If it's for a partnership, you put it in for the partnership. If it's a fiduciary 1041, it's estates and trust, you have to put it in that input field. So again, some of this reporting is a little complicated. I really appreciate this question, though, because we are seeing more and more K-1s. And I will talk a little bit more about the reporting for K-1s when we come back from this next break. Again, if you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. That's yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'll do the best I can to answer those questions at an upcoming show or directly emailing you back. And we really appreciate the questions. I really like them. And we will round up the remainder of the answer to this question when we come back from this break and then continue our discussion on cash flow decisions. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about cash flow decisions this evening, but I did want to first take some time to answer a question from a listener that came through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can submit questions there as well. We were talking about K-1s and the intricacies of reporting K-1s and how it could be a little confusing. So digging into the K-1s, so I've explained the differences in the different kinds of K-1s that someone might have. It can be complicated, but some of the fields that you will see on the K-1 actually could be very easy when you're inputting it into software to see where they go. Sometimes there's business income, sometimes there's rental income, but the easiest income that's reported on the K-1s for many people, especially beneficiaries of estates and trusts or some of these energy investments might be interest and dividends. So those interest and dividends that are reported on the K-1, they will flow through to the appropriate schedule on your individual return. So as an individual, when you file a 1040, you have a Schedule B. B as in boy, and that reflects the interest that you earned and the dividends that you earned. So if you earned some of those via a K-1 from a trust, those would automatically flow over to those particular schedules. So sometimes the reporting can get a little tricky, though, when for partnerships, because when you buy a partnership interest, if you're buying it through your brokerage firm, you might think they're keeping track of all the information on that K-1, and they're actually not. And where it gets tricky is if you sell your partnership interest. So the information on the cost basis of what you paid for that investment through your broker is not usually the correct cost basis. And that's why, as I mentioned before our break, the supplemental pages from the K-1 are so, so important, because they guide us or your tax preparer in the proper reporting of any of the adjustments to the cost basis. So what happens, basically, partnerships will make distributions to their partners over the years, which impacts their original cost basis. And the annual activity that we see on those K-1s also impacts the cost basis. And the broker isn't keeping track of that. So the partnership keeps track of it. So in the supplemental information, when you sell your interest, that's where we're going to find the really useful information, where the partnership will tell us what were the adjustments over the years and what kind of adjustments do we have to make to the cost basis. And sometimes there's some ordinary gains that are reported on that supplemental information that could be quite hefty. So just in a very simple example, if you invest $10,000 into a partnership and over the years they pay you $500 a year for 5 years, well, they've paid you $2,500 from your original investment of $10,000. That might not be dividends. That might not be interest. That might not be business income. That could be a return of your own original investment. And you don't even realize that. You think you're getting a distribution. You think it might be a dividend. Well, it might not be. It could be a return of your own money. So that affects your cost basis. It reduces your cost basis. So that's why it's really important. So I thank our listener for sending in that question. I can't answer specifically to someone's individual situation because it can be so complicated. So you really want to make sure that you're talking to a tax advisor, especially in the year of sale, because that can be much more complicated. All right, so thanks for that question. To tonight's topic, cash flow decisions. So what I thought I would try to cover tonight is what kind of decisions we might have to make right now during these unsettling times if we find that we're in a position where we don't have cash flow coming in. Perhaps we've lost our job, or we're just furloughed, or it's just temporary. We expect we might go back, but this period could last for, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. And maybe prior to this, you were living paycheck to paycheck and you didn't have maybe reserves, which we'll talk about having a reserve. So what might be some of the cash flow decisions that one might be making right now? Next week, I'm also going to talk a little bit about cash flow as it relates to the environment that we're in right now, as it applies to retirement planning and required minimum distribution changes that we've seen. So I'll go more into depth on that next week, but I will just touch on that this evening. So cash flow needs. I'm hearing from many people that they're not spending money. It's an interesting twist. So we think that people might need money right now because maybe they're not working or they're working less. But in fact, some people might not need money or be spending money because maybe they're on a fixed income and they're retired. So if you're on a fixed income and you're retired and you're kind of stuck in the house, you may not be spending much money at all. And maybe where you thought you were going to be taking trips and traveling and maybe doing renovations on the house, maybe all of that's been put on hold and you could actually be building up cash reserves. So that could be one cash flow decision scenario. If you're not retired and you relied on those wages, as I mentioned, to meet your cash needs, you might still have decreased spending opportunities, but you still might be in a bind. So maybe you don't need as much for your cash flow as you were when you were working because you're not spending as much, but you still might be a little short. So what are some of your options? Well, as I mentioned on a previous show, I think it was last week, talking about revisiting our financial planning decisions, we talked about having a reserve, and this really kind of sheds light on our financial decisions that we've made over the past several years when we're all of a sudden in an emergency, a situation, a black swan like we've never seen before in our lifetimes. Did we have that reserve we've talked about, you know, for many, many times on this show, having an emergency reserve? You might realize you don't have one. So if you do have one and you have cash flow needs, the goal or the hope is that if you built up a 3-month, 6-month cash reserve, that might be enough to bridge you for the next few months until you get back to work. So you might have to tap into that emergency reserve. We might have it ingrained in you, emergency reserve, build that up, don't touch it. But it might be something that is now available to you. So hopefully you will have built up that reserve, and this is the time you might want to tap that if needed. So again, I'm first going to talk about folks who need cash flow and some ideas around that. When I come back from this next break, I'll talk a little bit about unemployment, your investments using a bucket strategy, Roth IRAs, and maybe someone who is close to Social Security age. Maybe it might be a time to claim as a cash flow option, but we'll talk about that. If you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. There's a place to submit questions, and an email will come to me. And I generally try to email you back directly and then also share your question on air, and I won't identify you personally if you don't want that. I sometimes will just say Sam or Bobby, whatever it might be. But those questions can be sent through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight we're talking about cash flow decisions, and we will continue our discussion as soon as we're back from this next break. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org under Public Affairs. Just scroll down to Your Financial Choices. Tonight we're talking about cash flow decisions, and I thought I would first touch on those cash flow decisions where you might actually need cash. There are also cash flow decisions where we are spending less. So that's a different decision. So let's start with what happens if you need money. So we talked about using your reserve. Hopefully you've had a reserve. I know when I first got into this field, we used to talk about a 3-month emergency reserve, and then 2008 hit, and then we started talking about 6-month reserves to have for emergencies. And now I think it's getting to the point where we're talking maybe 6 months to a year emergency reserve. And there could be a number of places where you could have that reserve. It could be cash in the bank. It might be a short-term portfolio. But, you know, when we're We're going to talk about buckets in your investment accounts a little bit later. Some people, I think when I first got in the industry, I would hear about people using their credit card as like an emergency reserve. That, of course, makes me very, very nervous because interest rates on credit cards can really vary. And sometimes people will say, yeah, but if I can get a zero rate, that's a pretty good deal. And sometimes you can get a zero rate on your credit card, so you might be tempted to do that. You just have to make sure that you're going to be able to follow through with making your payments timely, because if you don't, sometimes the interest rates revert, and you might have late penalty fees and things like that, and then there's not so much of an advantage anymore to doing that way. So I get a little nervous about using credit cards for emergency reserves. So have your emergency reserve. That should be available for your cash flow. And knowing that that was what its purpose was, don't be so nervous to use it if it means tapping that instead of maybe selling investments when they have gone down in value, right? So you want to make sure that you aren't necessarily tapping things. So if I have $30,000 of cash in the bank that was part of my emergency reserve to get me through 3 to 6 months of non-discretionary spending, rather than sell something in my portfolio when it's down, that might be a better choice to use the reserve, okay? I can't make any investment recommendations here. I'm just talking in general. You want to make sure what applies to you and your own situation. So having the reserve. What if we don't have the reserve? Well, I hope that if you are someone who was working and you lost your job, that you did go apply for unemployment. And that could even be if your employment was reduced. So with the CARES Act, the Department of Labor and through Congress, they made some provisions. So the Department of Labor explains that there are several new programs under the recent CARES Act, and this is from the Department of Labor website. They call it Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, which provides benefits for eligible individuals who are self-employed, seeking part-time employment, or who otherwise would not qualify for unemployment insurance benefits under state or federal law. So we have people who are employed, employees. You usually know about unemployment, and if you lose your job, you apply for unemployment compensation through your state website. So the states run the unemployment program. So as employees, we're typically used to that. But if you are self-employed, or someone who is seeking part-time employment or who would otherwise not qualify for normal benefits, there still could be something for you. So this is why I thought it was important to mention it. To be eligible, among other requirements, individuals must demonstrate that they are otherwise able to work and available for work within the meaning of applicable state law, except that they're unemployed, partially unemployed, or unable or unavailable to work because of COVID-19. Related reasons. So that is the little caveat. You have to have COVID-19 related reasons. Now, under the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program, eligible individuals who are collecting certain benefits, including regular unemployment, will receive an additional $600 in federal benefits per week for weeks of unemployment ending on or before July 31st, 2020. So they did that for about 4 months, an extra $600 a week. So if you listen to the news, sometimes you'll hear, gosh, people are making more money on unemployment than they would if they were working. And maybe people don't want to go back to work because they think, oh, this is the deal. Well, if your employer tries to bring you back and you refuse, then you may not be eligible for the unemployment benefits. So you got to watch out for that. If your employer offers you employment back, because some of these small businesses have applied for what they call the PPP, the paycheck program, where they've applied for loans, and if they rehire people and pay them for the subsequent 8 weeks, they can have their loan forgiven. So some employers are trying to bring people back to work. If you refuse, there may be some coordination with the agencies subsequently to say then that maybe you didn't qualify for unemployment if it was available to you and you didn't take it, so be careful of that. But if you're truly unemployed and you're not offered your job back, you have this additional benefit the federal government is kicking in of $600 a week. That is going to make a huge difference in your cash flow decisions on top of your regular unemployment compensation. And this would also apply to those people who are self-employed. And typically, people who were self-employed prior were not eligible for unemployment. So under this, the CARES Act, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, the PUA, that is for folks who otherwise would not have been eligible for regular unemployment insurance. In addition, they've extended the program an additional 13 weeks. I think it's for a total of 39 weeks of benefits. So lots of opportunities out there. As far as that it has to be because of a COVID-19 related reason, I just want to go over that because that might be a deal breaker. So your employer permanently or temporarily laid you off due to coronavirus measures. Your employer reduced your work hours due to coronavirus measures. You're self-employed and have lost income due to coronavirus measures. You're quarantined and can't work due to coronavirus. You're unable to work due to a risk of exposure to coronavirus. And you can't work because you're caring for a family member due to coronavirus. So there's a lot of broad interpretation in those descriptions of making sure that you have a COVID-19 related reason. For example, if you're self-employed, if the government has shut down and said you can't travel unless it's essential travel, and you're someone who is a door-to-door salesman for some product you developed yourself, well, you're not going to be able to go door-to-door anymore. So you could say then that as a self-employed person, you lost income because of the coronavirus measures. Quite often what we're really seeing is people may have a reduction in their hours or are temporarily laid off. So a lot of broad guidelines in determining COVID-related reasons for applying for unemployment. So again, those great extra benefits of $600 a week until July 31st, 2020, and they can go back from the time you were first unemployed if you're only filing now. So if you're just hearing about it now, you could still go file and file going backwards. For self-employed people, they're looking for a copy of your tax return from 2019 or those tax documents you might be given, 1099s, that people have provided you to reflect the income they've paid you. All right? So cash flow decisions, if you're eligible for unemployment, make sure you're applying for it. All right? We are going to continue our discussion on cash flow decisions, and hopefully it'll help those folks who need places to tap some money if this goes on, you know, longer than we expect. If you have questions, you can send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia with a heartfelt thank you, our listeners and members, for making our spring fund drive an overwhelming success. A lot of thought went into this drive. It's a strange time. Should we conduct the drive? Maybe not. What should we do? Finally, at our last meeting, the staff, Seamus, Neil, James, Arlene, Allison, and Frank, confirmed to me that our listeners rely on WDIY, and they will continue to support WDIY as they have the past 25 years. So, we asked for your help, and you stepped up, like never before. So from the WDIY staff and the volunteers who provide the many choices and real voices, we say stay healthy and thank you. Thank you so much for your very generous support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are very excited to be here and so proud of our WDIY crew who have kept the station running and helping to bring this show to you, while not live, at least a fresh show. So thank you so much, especially to Neil Heaver. Thank you, Neil, for helping us coordinate all this. Folks, we want to continue bringing shows to you and topics that are of interest to you. So as our previous listener had sent in a question about K-1s, if you have a question or a topic you would like to me to cover, please send the ideas to us. You can do that via the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We are talking about cash flow decisions this evening, more on the side of what happens if you need a little help, a little bolster with your cash flow. Let's not forget about our reserve, our emergency reserve account. If you would be eligible for unemployment, make sure you're filing for that if you are. I did want to mention, if you are an employee, you're filing under the regular website. You can just Google Pennsylvania unemployment or New Jersey unemployment, because unemployment, by the way, is a state-run program. You do it through your state's website. So, but for self-employed people, they have a separate website for you. You do not file under the regular unemployment website. Just Google your state and then PUA. The PUA stands for Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, and that's for those people who aren't traditionally covered by unemployment. So make sure you're filing for that if you are eligible. Now, where else can we go if we have cash flow needs? You might have investments, so not everyone does, and if you don't, you know, it is a little bit harder for those people who might not have investments to pull from. Hopefully you have that emergency reserve. If you don't have that emergency reserve and you were employed, hopefully unemployment's going to help see you through some things. I'm not a fan of credit cards, but if you could have a 0% credit card and you have no other options, that might be something, but you have to be able to make those payments. So I really try not to encourage that type of thing to bolster your cash flow. Now, investments. If you have some investments, this could be an individual account, a joint account. Hopefully what you have thought about in your investment strategy, we've talked on prior shows about the importance of diversification of your investments across a number of different asset classes, where it's small cap, mid cap, large cap, U.S. equities, foreign equities, bonds, money markets, a big diversification. In your diversifying, another way to kind of manage cash flow is to set your investments up in buckets. And typically we're thinking about this more as we get closer to retirement, where you might have a bucket for your 1 to 5 year cash needs, and then your 6 to 10 year cash needs, and then your really long-term portfolio. So generally what we're looking at is, someone gets closer to retirement, we know they're not going to have cash flow coming in to the extent they were when they were working. We would want to make sure that they have a place to go grab money, that if we are in turbulent times and volatile markets, that once you're retired, you're not having to pull from your portfolio when the market is down. So that's where we talk about the 1 to 5 year bucket, so that we make sure that your cash spending for that 5 year period is not going to be impacted by pulling out of investments, longer term investments. So usually if we're pulling in 1 to 5 years, then we're generally more conservative, less volatility in those investments. Some of you might already be there. Maybe you thought you were going to retire in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, and you have this bucket strategy. So if you had to pull from somewhere, you would want to look to see where you're going to have less of an impact on drawing down your investments when the market is down. Now, though, at this time, the market has recovered from the bottom that we hit in late March. So there has been some recovery. We're not back up to the February highs, but we don't really want to be pulling out of investments that have dropped too much if we're trying to just have them for cash flow. So review your investments. See if there's some place that you might want to pull. And because we have had a recent little bit of a recovery, maybe now would be the time to revisit, hey, if I'm going to need cash, maybe now is the time to raise some of it. So revisit that with your advisor. We have talked on past shows about Roth IRAs. Everyone knows Roth IRAs are one of my favorite things to talk about. And that's because you can save money in a Roth account and invest it. and the earnings grow income tax free. The earnings and the growth are income tax free if used in your retirement. It has to be the longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years before you tap your Roth to have those earnings tax free. The longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years to have the earnings come out income tax free. But why do I like Roth so much? It's because, as I've said before, you can always take out your original contribution without tax or penalty. So if I have put $5,000 a year into a Roth for 5 years, my original contributions would be $25,000. If in that 5 years my investment has grown to $30,000, then I have $5,000 of earnings on that $25,000. If I had to tap my account and I had nowhere else to go, I didn't have my emergency reserves, I didn't have unemployment available to me, I didn't have too much in my regular investments in my individual account or my joint account, but I did have money in my Roth, I can tap those original contributions. So in my story, I have $25,000 of original contributions, $5,000 of growth. The IRS tells me I can take out my original contribution without tax or penalty. So that could be someplace you could tap. Now, if you had to take out the full account of $30,000 and you're not age 59 and a half, or you did not have it for 5 years, so you wouldn't have $30,000 if it hadn't been 5 years. That would you wouldn't be able to build it up that quick. So if you had $30,000 and you had to take it all out, you would pay income tax then on the $5,000 and a 10% penalty if you're not age 59 and a half or it had not been 5 years. So it's easy to kind of avoid the tax and the penalty if you only take the original contribution. So that's really nice when these Roths were first set up. It's called the tier system, and what distribution comes out first? Your original contribution. So that's pretty handy. So a Roth IRA is another place that you could tap. Now, the caution on that, again, is if it's invested, you know, with the market and the volatility in the market, you never know when you're taking it out. Are you going to take a hit on your investment or not? You might want to look at your underlying investments within the Roth, and you may be able to liquidate something that doesn't have, you know, maybe a loss on it. So you can kind of dig down into the details on that. One other place that, well, there's probably more than one place, but another idea might be Social Security. When we reach age 62, as long as we've had enough quarters paid in to our Social Security system, you could qualify for Social Security as early as age 62. Now, the issue is if you collect early on Social Security, you actually take a permanent haircut on your benefit. So this is something else that requires extra scrutiny when you're making any kind of decisions around Social Security. I've done a number of shows on this. Not sure if you want to take a permanent haircut on your benefit. But let's say that you were working, you intended to work until maybe 63, 64, and you're 62 now, and they've laid you off or said you're done, and you don't think you're going to get your job back. You could file for Social Security, understanding you would take a permanent haircut. And for people who had full retirement age at 66, if you collected at 62, your haircut was only 25%. But for many people, I think it's after 1954, I don't hold me on my dates. If your full retirement age is 67 and you collect at 62, your haircut is 35%. So if you look on your Social Security statement and they tell you that you're going to make $2,000 at your full retirement age, well, you're not going to make $2,000 if you retire at 62. You would make $1,300. You would get a reduction of 35%. That's a big haircut. So that's why some people really ponder the timing of taking their Social Security. But again, we're in extraordinary times, and you might be desperate and might not have anywhere to go and may need cash flow. Well, if you were working in my story, then you would file for unemployment first, see how long that lasts, and then if after that runs out, you're at least age 62, filing for Social Security may be an option for you. What happens, though, is if you go back to work and you already started collecting, if you earn over a certain amount, you have to pay your Social Security back. And the amount now, they change it every year. It gets adjusted for inflation. Let's say, and I'm going to just average it out, let's say it's $18,000. So if you go back to work and you make over $18,000, you would have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over that amount to Social Security. You have to pay it back in your Social Security benefits. So if you went back to a job where you were making $100,000, you would have to pay back all your Social Security. So maybe that Social Security benefit was helping you during your period of unemployment and it served its purpose, and then you went back to work and were earning your normal salary again. If you had to pay it all back, then in essence your Social Security kind of stopped and you start earning credits again. So that is something to keep in mind. The other thing that can happen is, and a lot of people don't realize this, normally you can change your mind within a year and you'd have to pay back all the benefits. So if you started collecting for a couple months and all of a sudden they found a vaccine and everything's great, we're all going back to work and you get your job back, you could actually pay back the benefit that you had received. So within a year, you can change your mind and pay back the benefit. And you can only do that one time. You don't get to do that every 6 months, only one time. But the other thing that can happen is if once you reach full retirement age, this is the piece that a lot of people don't know. When you reach full retirement age, you actually can suspend your benefit and then let it build up an extra amount from full retirement age to age 70, let's say. So let's say you took the benefit for X number of years, you felt like you had to because you were really in dire straits and you started collecting the benefit, and then you realize that full retirement age, 66 or 67, that you got an inheritance, you didn't really need that Social Security money anymore, you could actually suspend it and let it start accruing additional benefits. All right? So number of options with that, but you just have to be careful with Social Security collecting too early, taking that permanent reduction. That could hurt you in your older years, especially if you have longevity. So you always want to consider all the implications of filing for Social Security, your implications to a survivor if you have a spouse, and to your cash flow, and to your taxes, and to your longevity. Folks, we are at the third quarter of the show and have one more section. So if you have questions, you're welcome to send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio is committed to our listeners' health and safety during the COVID-19 outbreak. Help us stop coronavirus. Lehigh Valley residents can do the five. Wash your hands for 20 seconds. Stay home unless absolutely necessary. Cover your face if you have to go out. Stay 6 feet apart of social distance. Feel sick? Contact medical professionals for next steps. For coronavirus updates and information, go to WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to yourfinancialchoices.com, and we're talking about cash flow decisions this evening. And next week, I'm going to go into a little bit more depth on the CARES Act and some options they've given us with taking distributions from retirement accounts or taking loans from retirement accounts. It was almost a little bit too much to try to squeeze in the show this evening. So that is a cash flow option for folks. I'm going to touch on that for just a minute, but know that next week I'm going to talk about that in much more depth. So when we're talking about cash flow decisions, for the most part, during these difficult times, these difficult financial times when the market's down or when perhaps we have lost our job or temporarily lost our job or have had a reduction in hours, people may be desperate for finding cash. Keep in mind that many of us are also spending less, so that has got to help. And if you are someone who might be on the cusp of running out of money, review your cash flow spending right now and see if there's anything that you can cut out quickly to reduce some of those expenses that you might have, which would help give you a little bit more time, maybe a little bit more time to tap your emergency reserve, or will help any unemployment benefits you're getting last a little longer or your investments last a little bit longer. So as far as those CARES Act options for helping folks with cash flow, they have expanded some provisions for similar to if we have hardship needs in taking distributions from our retirement accounts, from our employer retirement accounts. So the CARES Act provides some guidance to employers and employees on taking distributions from 401ks, 403bs, those types of plans under ERISA that gives people some flexibility in taking a distribution. Normally, if you take a distribution from a retirement account, it's all income taxable. That's not going to change, but sometimes we are not allowed to take a distribution from a retirement account if we're working. And an employer would have to have included in their plan document, the summary plan document that you get when you enroll in a 401k, they would have to have a provision within that document allowing for a hardship distribution. What the CARES Act did is they came out and said, hey, employers, if you have employees who need to take a hardship distribution, we will allow you to amend your plan, and you can go ahead and give them the distribution now as long as you amend your plan shortly thereafter. Well, I have been told by at least a couple clients who thought that they would go take a distribution from the retirement plan, that their employer has not adopted that. So you don't want to assume that you can just go grab money out of your employer plan. Now, a lot of folks, when they leave one employer, will roll over their former employer plan to an individual IRA or a rollover IRA. That would be different. This is what I'm talking about is actual employer plans under ERISA, 401ks, 403bs, and employers allowing distribution. So if they do allow a distribution, there's some guidance around that and how much you can take and how it gets income taxed and how you might be able to put it back. So that is a little bit more complicated, and I'm going to talk about that in depth next week if you need to take a distribution. You could also take a distribution from your IRA account. So there's no special wording on that. If you have an IRA, you could take a distribution from that IRA. Up to $100,000, it's income taxable. This is the part that people can't forget. It is income taxable. The caveat that the CARES Act gave, though, is if you take it out, they're going to let you tax it over 3 years, but you could also return it within 3 years. And normally, that is not allowed. Normally, it's a you can put it back into your IRA within 60 days. It's called an IRA rollover. We can usually only do that one time. The IRS is making an exception here that if you take money out of the IRA, you can choose to pay it back. You don't have to pay it back. You would have the income tax, and you avoid the 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. But here is the big asterisk. You have to have a COVID-related reason, a COVID-19-related reason. So real quick, had someone ask me, hey, this is a great thing I can do. Why don't I take money? I don't need the money. I'm working. I have plenty of investments, but thought this would be a great way to get money out of my retirement account. So can I just take the money out of my retirement account and put it in the bank or put it in a 529 education account for my child? And I said, well, first of all, you have to have a COVID-19 related reason to be able to take that distribution out with the potential to put it back in. And they didn't really have a reason. So that wouldn't necessarily qualify. Now, it so happened that this person also was already age 59 and a half. So they could have done that out of an IRA. Regardless, it would just be a taxable distribution, no 10% penalty. But they wanted to take it out of their 401k. So first of all, I told them, does your employer plan allow you to take distributions once you're age 59 and a half? Probably not. Usually they don't. Usually they'll say you can take out, it's called an in-service distribution when you're working, to be able to take money out. They don't just let people take money out of their retirement accounts when they're working. It has to be usually in-service distribution, usually at age 65, things like that. So number one, their plan probably wouldn't allow it. Second, their plan would have had to have allowed it under hardship distribution, so you would have had to prove that you had hardship. So you can't just willy-nilly make these decisions. That would have been an example when we talk about cash flow decisions where someone didn't need it to help fund their cash flow. They were trying to just take advantage of what they thought the CARES Act would provide for them, an opportunity to take the money out, and it would not apply in their situation. Now, in that example, again, you have to kind of think through when you need cash flow. So this person who asked me this question, I said they didn't really need it for cash flow. They just thought, hey, let's get that money out of the 401k while we can, even though they couldn't. But my alternative to them was, you know, you'd have taxes anyway, right? And they were both maxing out their 401k contributions to the tune of $25,000 each. So between this couple, it was $50,000 they were putting into the 401ks. I said, if you really are that worried about cash flow and want to use that money for something else rather than trying to pull it out of the 401k, which they wouldn't have been allowed to do anyway, and paying income tax on it, I said, just reduce your contributions to your 401k. That would give you more cash flow. So they could have reduced their 401k contributions to zero, and as I mentioned, that together they were putting in $50,000. Now, they wouldn't see $50,000 in their paycheck because they're getting a tax deferral on that money ordinarily. So maybe in their normal paycheck, if they're putting $50,000 into their 401k, they might, you know, only feel it like $35,000. Well, the same is true if they stopped putting in the $50,000. They're not going to have $50,000 in their hand because now that $50,000 is going to be subject to income tax. So they might net out $35,000 over a year. And then that gives them some of that cash flow they wanted to fund some education costs they thought they might have next year. All right, their response was, yeah, but we don't want to reduce our 401k contributions because we're getting a tax benefit for that. We're saving taxes. And I said, true, but you wanted to take money out of your retirement account and pay income tax. So it nets out to about the same. It's just about being a little bit smarter. Rather than pulling money out of the retirement account, maybe when the market's down, just stop putting in if they really wanted more cash. Now, some people, back to too much cash on their hands, we have people who are calling and saying, hey, can we put money into the market? Because if they don't need the cash and the market's down, they might see that as a buying opportunity. All right, so cash decisions for people who need to supplement their cash situation and cash decisions for people who may have too much cash available because they're not spending as much. Lots of decisions to make. Now, I thought that I would also add something that came up in a tax return that I was working on. And you can give people some ideas for tax savings, and you can say it once, you can say it twice, sometimes you can say it three times, and it doesn't always sink in. Had a client who filed their tax return, made more money this year than last year, and last year they made more money than the prior year. As they're making more money, their taxes are going up. So 3 years ago they had a refund, last year they had a small refund, this year they owe money. And they can't understand it. Well, you're making more money, and your taxes are going up. You're in a higher tax bracket, and they had some other net investment income tax, things like that, because their income's so high. But what I noticed on their W-2 is they are not fully funding their health savings account. They had child care expenses, and they're not taking advantage of a flexible spending account for dependent care. Now, if you have a health savings account, that means you have a high deductible health plan. You cannot also have a flexible spending account for health care, but you could have a flexible spending account for dependent care. So they would save a lot more in taxes if they maximized their health savings account. They were only putting in $500. It was a single member plan. They could have put in $3,500. That $3,000 more that they put in would save at least $1,000 in taxes for them. Boom. Spending money on medical anyway, might as well do it the right way through payroll deduction, get another tax-saving benefit, pre-tax benefit, funding the health savings account. If you didn't do it through the employer, you can do it up through the tax filing due date of July 15th, fund money, put it into your health savings account, whether it's a single plan or a family plan, and get the deduction on your tax return today. The dependent care flexible spending account, you can do up to $5,000 for a family, and you have to do that through your employer. Usually that is at enrollment, the annual enrollment period. But sometimes if you've just had a baby, you have a change in circumstance, it's a life event, you can go do that now. You can update for life events, whether you've stopped daycare or started daycare because of a life event. So some people, that's another cash flow option. If you're putting money away in a dependent care flexible spending account, you've had a life event, we no longer can put money into the daycare because we're not allowed to take the kids to daycare, then you could change that. Hey, folks, we've run out of time. There's always so much to say and so much to talk about. So next week, we are going to talk about retirement plan options under the CARES Act and required minimum distributions. There's some changes there as well. Coming up next, we have folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.
WDIY Allentown, 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Many choices, real voices. Thank you.